This is ABC News, New York. Art Van Horn speaking. This is a special report on the disaster in Alaska. A report on that story. Earthquake. One of the natural disasters where man is helpless. It struck a devastating blow to the state of Alaska. The quake struck at 10:45 p.m. last night Eastern Time. That was 5:45 p.m. in the afternoon, Alaskan time. The height of the homeward rush hour in Alaska's biggest city of Anchorage. Anchorage was badly damaged, especially in the section downtown. The rolling timbler lasted only a few minutes, but its power was terrible. Scientists say the Alaska quake registered as severe as an earthquake can register. Buildings collapsed. Anchorage's main shopping street was destroyed. Fires broke out. Electric power lines whipped down like angry snakes. Communications were cut off. And a spreading tidal wave, as though a huge stone had been dropped in a pond, spread damage down the Canadian, American, Mexican, and South American coasts, and across the Pacific to the islands of Hawaii and the Asian continent. The death toll is put at a minimum figure of 600 by officials on the scene. In the city of Kodiak, 50 died, 50 more are missing. A 30-foot tidal wave devastated Kodiak. 28 victims are known to have been killed in the seaport town of Valdez, some 125 miles east of Anchorage. Small communities along the edge of Kodiak Island reportedly disappeared. President Lyndon Johnson, informed of the disaster while on an Easter holiday at his Texas ranch, immediately mobilized federal assistance. Mr. Johnson's first act was to declare the state of Alaska a disaster area. Speculation arose immediately that the president would fly north to inspect the damage from the air, as he did during the recent Ohio River flood. A plane is standing by in Washington, but presidential aides indicate they are doubtful the president will make such a trip today. Of Alaska's three members in Congress, Senators E.L. Bartlett and Ernest Greening are Alaska-bound from Washington, while Representative Ralph Rivers is waiting for onward transportation in Seattle. Soon after the earth shock hit the state of Alaska with its heavy blow, ABC contacted Paul Garwood in Fairbanks. Garwood outlined the disaster as it was seen in its earliest stage.
I'm reporting from Fairbanks Civil Defense Headquarters on a disaster that has struck the United States 49th state. Late report from Civil Defense Headquarters reveals that Anchorage has been very heavily hit by an earthquake of major proportions. Practically the entire downtown area has suffered damage estimated at from 75 to 90%. Many homes in the Turnagain section of the city, the so-called Gold Coast residential area, have slid into Cook Inlet. These homes were situated on a bluff overlooking the inlet. Natural gas lines have been ruptured, but according to reports, as yet unconfirmed, quick action by gas company employees has averted additional disaster. The Government Hill residential area, adjacent to the Elmendorf Air Force Base, has reportedly been isolated from the rest of the city. Road damage in the Anchorage area is extensive, with crevasses across the highway in several instances. The port city of Valdez, reportedly wiped out by a tidal wave, has been isolated by a tremendous landslide across the only access road, the Richardson Highway. At 10:50 p.m. Alaska Standard Time, the second tidal wave was sweeping up Cook Inlet, and it hit the little fishing village of Soldovia on the southern tip of the Kenai Peninsula. Tidal action at Haines, Alaska, in the northern portion of the panhandle, is reported as a full tide over 1 hour ahead of schedule, and that the water was continuing to rise at the rate of 1 inch every 15 seconds. Haines is the northern terminus for the Alaska ferry system, and it's feared that terminal facilities may be destroyed. The Coast Guard has been constantly warning coastal residents to evacuate to higher ground, and from all reports, few, if any, fatalities have been recorded from that area of the state. Military warning sites are cooperating with ham radio operators in the setting up of a statewide communications network. The early stages of this disaster are difficult to cope with due to the tremendous distances involved. Even now, some 5 hours after the disaster struck, many communities are yet to be heard from. Damage will undoubtedly run into the hundreds of millions of dollars, and it's feared that the loss of life will be heavy. This is Paul Garwood reporting for KFAR Radio, ABC News in Fairbanks, Alaska.
That report, an early report, gives you some idea of how the scene appeared in this disaster's early hours. In Washington, ABC contacted the Pentagon, which is mounting a major effort at rescue and assistance. The helping hand is not only for the sizable military contingent in Alaska, but for the civilian population as well. Defense Department Information Chief Arthur Sylvester reports on news received from Alaska from the commanding general there, R.J. Reeves. Sylvester told ABC...
The general said that the Alaskan communities of Anchorage, Seward, Valdez, Cordova, Kodiak, and Kenai have received major damage. There are apparently some casualties in these communities, but because it is dark and confused, the local civil authorities have not been able to determine or even estimate the numbers at this time. Presently, there are no known military casualties, that is to say, of people living and operating on the military bases. The general gave the following summaries of confirmed damage reports. He said that Anchorage International Airport Control Tower was destroyed, and FAA facilities there are inoperative. Indeed, the field has been closed to civilian flight, because at the present time, less than some 3,000 feet of runway is usable. In Anchorage, which is nearby, numerous major buildings have been extensively damaged and homes destroyed. Fuel tanks in the port area have been ruptured, and fires have been started in the rail yards. The business district of Kodiak has been washed away by the tidal wave. However, warning was given in sufficient time to allow evacuation of personnel out of the danger area. Incomplete reports from Valdez and Seward indicate that the major tidal wave damage has been great and has resulted in fires. The Alaskan Command is giving all available assistance to the stricken communities, and General Reeves said this will continue as long as required to protect lives and property and to help the Alaskan people recover from the calamity that has been visited upon them. Some examples of this assistance are troops and material support, which General Reeves has provided to Anchorage and has attempted to get into the Seward area. But unfortunately, fissures in the road, some as wide as 4 feet, stopped our troops from transporting supplies and medical aid to the Seward area. General reported that an attempt will be made at daylight to airlift such supplies into the Seward area, and he proposes to use a combination helicopter and C-123 and C-130 airlifts. They have been directed to provide troop and material support to Valdez as soon as the weather permits. The weather has been a limiting factor. Say nothing of the dark. The general reported that the visibility at 8 o'clock was 200 feet and a half mile. The barracks on Elmendorf Air Force Base have been made available to shelter civilians. The Alaskan Command headquarters will continue on a 24-hour operation during the present emergency to direct military support and assist in operations. Elmendorf Air Force Base, Fort Richardson, the Army Base, and Wildwood Station have all been damaged. The extent of the damage is currently being surveyed. However, the Alaskan Command is operational, and General Reeves says that he's fully capable of carrying out its assigned mission. The preliminary damage survey of Elmendorf and Fort Richardson revealed the following. The Elmendorf Air Force Base Hospital is severely damaged, and the patients have been evacuated. Some damage has been suffered by aircraft on the apron, but the field remains capable of performing its defense mission also. The control tower at Elmendorf was severely damaged and is unusable, but it has been replaced by a mobile one. Both installations, that is to say, the Air Force Base and Fort Richardson, has suffered moderate to severe damage to utilities, and in some instances, power has not been fully restored to either one. The continuing tremors causing further damage and complicating the problem of reorganization and getting things back to normal. So far as the communications are concerned, the majority of the long-line voice communications have been restored, and essential circuits to air defense activities are all operational.
That was Pentagon Information Chief Arthur Sylvester in Washington. The Red Cross is mounting a major rescue and aid effort. ABC's John Casserly talked in Washington to the Red Cross Director of Disaster Services, Robert Edson. We switch now to Washington for that report.
Mr. Edson, are you operating on a disaster basis?
Oh, yes, indeed. With these earthquakes in Alaska, this is certainly a devastating disaster. And we have been operating since 1 a.m. this morning here at National Headquarters, as well as the Western area as soon as word was received. So we are operating around the clock, and we'll continue to operate around the clock as long as is necessary.
From information you now have, is the earthquake as big as San Francisco at the turn of the century?
The intensity of the earthquake, I understand, was about the same as that which struck San Francisco. I think by virtue of the less populated areas that it hit, it would not be considered as serious, and the loss of life at least does not indicate to be that it will be as severe in that instance as in San Francisco earthquake.
Can the Red Cross estimate at this time the loss of life and injuries involved in the earthquake?
I wish we could, because, of course, the people would like to know, but we do not have such information, and rather than issuing some type of a figure, we would say, no, we do not have. We have talked to the field director at Elmendorf Air Force Base, who has been in and around Anchorage, and he does indicate that the survey teams are going out, but that the damage of the business district and residential district is extremely heavy.
Is there any danger of disease now, or do you have any plans in regard to that for the future?
Well, there's no evidence of any diseases at the present time, and we do not have any basic information in relation to the number of people that might have been injured. Of course, the public health authorities will be very cognizant of the danger of contamination of water supplies, and I'm sure that every precaution will be taken to prevent any spread or any disease that might be developing among the people affected by the disaster.
How much of the Red Cross funds may be called on?
Of course, until we know approximately what the damage has been and what the needs of the families are, how many houses have actually been destroyed or major damage, it will be impossible to make an estimate, but this will be considered certainly as a major disaster, and we will want to assure the people that the Red Cross will stay on the job in the recovery phase of this operation until the people who need our help get it. In other words, the Red Cross, while this is in the emergency phase right now, we will move additional staff as situation warrants to help deal with the families on an individual basis to help them recover from the disaster. And this assistance, I would emphasize, by the Red Cross is an outright grant, and there's no obligation for repayment. I emphasize that, sir, because this is so frequently misunderstood.
How much in funds is available for such a disaster?
Well, we have an $8 million budget for disaster operations. So far, with the exclusion of the Ohio Valley floods, nature has been fairly kind. But, of course, there are many chapters who are in fund campaigns at the present time in their March campaign, and people desiring to contribute should contribute through their local Red Cross chapters.
Would the Red Cross be willing to spend, for example, $1 million to $5 million?
Oh, the Red Cross will spend that which is necessary to meet the needs of these people, be it $1 million or $5 million or $10 million. The funds of the American people have always responded to the Red Cross to help these people who need help, and we will do the job, whatever the cost might be, with the support of the American people.
How long would you estimate the Red Cross may be in Alaska?
Of course, this is extremely difficult because, again, we do not know the extent of the damage. We do not know the total number of families affected, so that it could be a month, it could be 6 weeks, it could be 2 months, depending upon the size, the scope, and the number of people that really need Red Cross help.
When do you believe a good estimate on the damage may be available?
On the basis of the information that we now have, that survey teams are beginning to move into the area, it would be my judgment that within 24 to 48 hours that we would have a pretty firm estimate of the actual damage to real property and to houses and businesses.
Reports of casualties and damage are just beginning to come in with any detail. Officials fear the worst on the earthquake in Alaska. This has been a special ABC News report on the earthquake in Alaska. Art Van Horn, ABC New York. This is the ABC Radio Network.